Thank you for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start the show, as I mentioned earlier, to talk with you about elder abuse. I've seen some figures on that. There's maybe more than 5 million older adults in the U.S. every year who are affected by elder abuse. It can cost a lot of money, billions of dollars. And we'll talk about it, and you know, just in dollar terms, okay, but what about the feelings of the people, the family members, and the older adult himself or herself? All those things come into play, and we have two guests for you today. Tracy Schrepfer is a professor in the School of Social Work at the UW-Madison. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And with us as well, Marcia Hendrickson. Marcia is Executive Director of the South Madison Coalition of the Elderly. And Marcia, thank you so much for joining us, too.
Thank you for the opportunity, Larry.
So as we listen to what our experts have to say, I hope you'll join in the conversation. You may have some questions about elder abuse. Douglas from Oneida is already on with a question. You may have one, too. Join in the conversation. Maybe you've had an experience to share, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And let's define elder abuse first. And
sure.
Marcia, you want to?
Sure. Elder abuse is any form of mistreatment that results in a harm or a loss to an older person. It can include self-neglect, financial exploitation, neglect, physical abuse, emotional abuse, and sexual abuse. And as you said before, it's estimated that it affects over 5 million people in the United States, and the costs are in billions of dollars. And one of the reasons it's problematic is it's very hard to really truly define. And it also is very unreported.
Yeah.
It's estimated that elder abuse affects 1 in 10 older adults. And it's also estimated that 1 in 23 cases go unreported, so it's over double the cases that really occur and totally go unreported because people are vulnerable and often dependent on others.
Yeah, who are the most likely victims, Tracy Schrepfer?
So, Larry, females are more likely.
Okay.
Particularly as older adults. So,
yeah.
This is really tough because people have a hard time understanding why that an elder who's being abused would allow that to continue.
Yeah.
But we've probably all heard this where older adults are scared of nursing homes. They don't want to be placed in a nursing home. Only 4% of elders are in a nursing home at any one time. But the reality is that's a myth that we do put people in, and so people want to remain in their home. And if that means being abused verbally or whatever, they'll often do that. And that's just one of the reasons.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's bring Douglas from Oneida in because he has something I think that relates to this. Douglas, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And what have you got for us today?
Well, my question was on the elder abuse would be more mentally. I have a mother that's 82 years of age, and she has a sister that calls, and you know, they, a lot of times I'll hear them arguing, and you know, it just breaks my heart. And a lot of it, you know, is just so senseless. You know, a lot of it would be like on, well, particularly my mother, she really adores President-elect Donald Trump, and then obviously, you know, her sister doesn't. She's a Democrat, and then you know, she just runs down Donald Trump, you know, and you know, and that makes her feel bad. And so my question is, you know, would this indeed be a form of elderly abuse?
Okay, so that kind of arguing. Would you, Tracy, would you call that, could you consider that elder abuse?
You know, I think it always really depends, which is not something people always want to hear. But I think oftentimes with elder abuse, if the elder can't get away or can't make the decision, so for example, with your mom, you know, if she feels that she can't just hang up the phone, if she can't get away from the sister, then it really can become abusive because the sister's taking advantage of the fact that she is vulnerable. Most of the time, though, if your mom is pretty fine and the sister's calling up and your mom engages, it wouldn't necessarily be abuse.
Yeah. Marcia, you're nodding in agreement on that?
I would just, you know, maybe they don't talk politics. Maybe they talk family issues or gardening or other interests that they have and possibly, you know, suggest that to your mom that, you know, I see you're getting upset when sis calls and maybe you should just stick to pleasant conversations or things that you're both interested in and maybe kind of just redirect and steer the conversation if you have. It's very important that people remain very calm and patient and understanding and compassionate with older adults because they are very, very vulnerable. Most of them have gone through so many losses and issues and changes and so they want to hold on to anything that they possibly can control.
Yeah.
Particularly family, wanting to hold on to family.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, Douglas, you'd probably tell your mom that the next time politics comes up, or maybe she should just tell her sister right off the bat, hey, you know what, we're not going to talk about politics, we'll talk about anything else, but leave the politics out of it. That makes some sense. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Well, there we had a circumstance where it was a sister, so I'm wondering who does the abusing most of the time when we're... is it a family member?
The vast majority of the time, it is a family member. Probably about two-thirds. And, of course, part of this has to do with the fact that those are usually, it's adult children that are caring for their elders. And in society, I feel like some of this is really about what we, as a society, do in terms to help these adult children. There's what is called respite, and respite is about giving caregivers a break. And in society, we don't have a lot of respite services. It can be very, when I was a practicing social worker, it was very hard sometimes to find respite. And we all know if you're in a situation where you're exhausted and a person just needs from you and needs from you and needs from you, you can start to lose your temper. You can start to get irritable because you're exhausted.
It can be stressful. Yeah, can be very stressful.
Exactly. And the other thing is we don't give people skills. Nobody trains people on how to lift, on how to change bedding and things like that. So what happens is adult children injure themselves, and now they're in pain, and they're still taking care of the elder, and they can't afford to get help.
And there's nobody, and there is no help available.
Right. There's a crisis in healthcare workers as well. And you know, one of the other things that we find of perpetrators of elder abuse, particularly what we found in Dane County, that 23% of the perpetrators have AODA issues or mm-hmm. other issues. And so oftentimes, again, this goes back to the reluctance of a victim of elder abuse to report because, say, the grandchild is taking care of them. They know the grandchild needs help. They're addicted. They're stealing money from them. They feel that they're entitled to grandma's money because they're taking care of her or taking care of her dog or whatever. And rather than press charges, they just want to have their loved one get help. They want to have that grandchild, that perpetrator of the abuse, get help. And so that becomes a big issue that we're seeing more and more of, unfortunately.
And shame, too. If you think about it, would you want to tell your community and the world that my son beats me or steals from me or is emotionally abusive? Because then, you know what, elders internalize that, and then it becomes about, I'm a bad parent.
Yeah.
And so One is the shame of what their child is doing, and the other is the fear that if they report, their child will be locked up. And then they will go to, they feel, go to a nursing home.
Let's go to Dan in Coloma, who has a question. Dan, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. You're welcome. My question is to do with parents that do not respond in their mid, well, they're in their mid-80s. They're not making real prudent decisions at times. My siblings and myself are trying to guide them and help them, but they refuse to make any real gains in estate planning and closure to issues that probably should have been dealt with 10 years ago.
Yeah.
How do you handle it? I mean,
yeah.
They're not following the advice, legal advice given to them by their attorney. I mean, if they think if they just ignore the problem, it will, well, they'll go away before it will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for calling, Dan. Well, maybe both. Tracy, do you want to start, or Marcia?
Tracy. Dan, I just have one question, and that is, are both your parents capable of making their own decisions, et cetera?
Yeah, I would say one of them is kind of ailing, was just diagnosed with the onset of the dementia, Alzheimer's type situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other one seems to be covering up. And the roles have changed from one being more on the financial game to, you know, it's just a hard thing to, I don't know what else I'm looking for advice how I can turn this corner with this change in well-being.
So I'll just talk a little bit just about the emotional piece, and then Marcia will chime in about more strategies. So in terms of, for your parents, we do see this as very common when there is a couple, partnered or married, particularly if they've been together for a while, and one is developing dementia, something or in a situation where it's going to threaten the independence of that couple. And so what happens is they begin to protect each other. They become a unit, and they're not going to talk, they're not going to tell, and they're really afraid of letting the children in, because they're afraid if they let the children in, that then the children will begin making decisions for them. And so, and they may be decisions that even if they know somewhere in their being that they're good decisions, they're not there yet, they're not ready. And so it becomes very, very frightening, you know, as to what's going to happen to us. Will we be separated? Will we put in a nursing home, et cetera? And so, Marcia, you want to say a little bit about strategies?
Oftentimes, and Dan, I have gone through this personally in the last year and a half as well, dealing with parents that are in their late 80s. And oftentimes, it's best to engage another trusted professional, whether that, I know older adults tend to put a lot of faith in what their medical providers, what their doctors and medical social workers and others in that profession, or possibly faith community. Oftentimes, some of those other professionals that are trusted by the older adults can kind of steer the conversation in a way it should be going, because as Tracy said, it does get very, very threatening if children are going to take away that decision-making process. And the other thing is to identify some resources in your community. Most places have an aging and disability resource center that you can phone and see if there are some other resources, even somebody as a visiting social worker to come in to possibly set up some Meals on Wheels or some other assistance that might be helpful when to kind of have them get some supports that they might not think they need, but once they have them in place will be grateful for that support. So those are just a few suggestions. I it's a challenge, and it is really an emotional, very difficult conversation to have.
Yeah.
And I just want to follow up with just two small things. One is, Marcia was talking about a social worker. There are now, you can go online, there are now what are called geriatric case managers, and actually they're certified, so you can go to the site for the certified and then look in your area, and they come out to the home, and these are social workers who are trained, and they are excellent in terms of sitting with the parent and kind of, like Marcia said, they're more neutral, they're less threatening. And then the other thing is for you and your siblings, one thing when I used to coach families about talking with their elders is to always focus on independence. Even like when they used to have to take a car away or something, they would say, you know, Mom and Dad, if you keep driving, our worry is that you'll have a wreck and you'll end up, you know, maybe you'll end up to where you're in a wheelchair, and then it's really going to be hard to be independent. But if you stop driving and we come up with other ways for transportation, that could extend your independence, because that is the big threat, the loss of independence.
Yeah. Lots of good tips there. Dan, thank you so much for calling and good luck. I really appreciate your call. Taking a look at elder abuse awareness, actually coming up June 15th is Elder Abuse Awareness Day. For the world, actually. It's coming up on June 15th. And our guest today, Tracy Schrepfer, professor in the School of Social Work at UW-Madison, Marcia Hendrickson, executive director of the South Madison Coalition of the Elderly. Our guests here, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll talk about the special people, places, and events that make Wisconsin unique. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. And please stay listening as we talk about elder abuse awareness with our two guests, Tracy Schrepfer and Marcia Hendrickson. Great to have them along. And there's an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Laura in Milwaukee up next. Laura, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to talk.
Sure.
I just wanted to know, right now I don't believe that caregiving, as significant as it is, both for elder and children, you know, or for disabled people, is considered a part of the GDP. And I'm wondering if it became a prevalent part of our, and that's throughout the world, where caregivers are underpaid or not paid, and it's considered negative as part of the, you know, growth in the economy. And I think if there's a new turn, a look at it, because it's so prolific, there's so many people, that if it were looked at in terms of being a, you know, product and an advantage towards creating a good community and a profitable community, raising people or taking care of people, and you know, and looking at what contributions each one's, regardless of age, as to what they have towards our families and our lives, we just might turn this whole abusive way of responsibility and burden turned into actually something that is, you know, akin towards looking forward to having that care, you know, and being careful with your elderly parents. Where now, you know, the burden is where people are working very, very hard and very long, and when they're at it, not just children, but their elderly parents, it becomes a burden, and there's no rewards that go along with it. I'm just wondering if maybe making it a part of the gross domestic product, it might become less of elderly abuse.
Mm. Well, thanks for calling, Laura. Let's turn to Marcia first.
Very good, valid points, Laura. There is currently a caregiver shortage, and it's probably only going to get worse because of some of the points that you brought up. Yes, it's not valued the way it should be. It's low pay. It's very, very difficult work. And how unfortunate that our most vulnerable citizens, our oldest and our youngest citizens, are subject to that level because we don't value it enough. And there's currently, particularly in the Elderly Services Network, a lot of advocacy around caregiving support. We're trying to get some legislation passed so that employers value people that do need to provide caregiving, or some sort of financial incentives, possibly tax credits. There's a variety of different ways we can advocate, but definitely I know that the certain professional associations are lobbying for higher pay and more training and support for caregivers, for paid caregivers, because we know that this is a national crisis, and it needs to be addressed, because more and more people with the aging population are going to need caregiving. And you're right. It's preventative. If we can provide quality care, the chances of abuse being reduced are going to be a lot greater.
Yeah. So. And you should talk about your own role or your own South Madison Coalition of the Elderly. You're the executive director mm-hmm. there. How does your organization fit in?
We're a social service agency, and we have about 23 staff. Most of them are master's degree social workers that provide case management services to older adults age 60 and over throughout Dane County. We offer meal programs on a daily basis, which is important because that way we can be another set of eyes and ears for people when we see people starting to fail or have issues that might be signs of abuse, such as they're disheveled. They used to really take good care of themselves. Now they're not bathing. They're coming with dirty clothes. They're having incontinence issues, things like that, to connect them to services and supports they might need throughout their lifespan. And so the work we do is really, really important to keep people, as Tracy said, independent, and the quality of life is as high quality as it can be throughout their lifespan.
And I would bet that some of your folks graduated from the School of Social Work at the UW-Madison. Tracy, talk about the programs that you have.
So I think that most of our students are working for Marcia at the Coalition. I will say, I'm going to preface this with just some numbers, because this is really important in terms of the caregiving, aging, et cetera. So we have 78 million baby boomers.
Yeah.
And those 78 million baby boomers born after World War II, 1946 and on, every day 10,000 of them turn 65. Every single day, and every hour, 330. So when we think about the numbers, and this will go on until 2029, so the numbers are increasing. But the issue is that when we think about caregivers, the issue is only 5% of social workers are trained to work in the field of aging. Geriatricians, which are doctors that work with elders, those numbers are dropping. Geriatric nurses, those numbers are dropping. And what we have is the caregivers that are needed are not there because aging, people don't want to work in aging. They mm-hmm. want to work with children. So this caregiver shortage, we watch as the number of baby boomers, it's unprecedented what
yeah.
we're going to, unprecedented. And, you know, I think Laura's right. This is only going to get worse unless we can turn this around in some way. But part of it does have to do with people also have to want to work with older adults.
Yeah.
And at our school, I work very hard to get our students interested in aging, but we have the same issue. But the students that do go into aging are very passionate, and we train them like South Madison Coalition. We have students who are placed there. They do. They're in the field for their time in the school.
Yeah.
And so they get lots of training, and in terms of the education, the knowledge that they need, that when they graduate. They are able to then go on and careers in aging. That's where if we think money, that's where the jobs are going to be.
Lots of opportunity. There's no shortage of opportunity, Marcia.
And I just think also as boomers as we are,
yes.
age. Our society really values youth and values people looking youthful and acting youthful. And as we become baby boomer, you know, as baby boomers age, we have a different perception of aging. It's like we're not old, but and so possibly with that will come a greater value for older adults. We as a society have not traditionally in the United States have not traditionally valued our elders the way a lot of other cultures and groups have done. And so I'm hoping as we age that we bring that that value and that long due respect to aging and to the process of aging and to our elders.
Probably from the political side, too. A lot of voters in that
group. Exactly. Exactly. Right now, we're also, in terms of marketing, we are the group to market to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you're hearing our songs on the TV when they do ads because they're drawing those boomers in. So boomers actually could have a lot of power. Yeah. We'll have a lot of power.
Laura, thanks for bringing that up. I really appreciate your comments. I want to give Chris in Watertown a chance to join us as well. Chris, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I agree with all those comments. In fact, I went back for my master's degree to work in the field of gerontology because I went through a horrible experience. My father, I grew up on a dairy farm in central Wisconsin, and my parents had moved into a local town, Reedsburg, but they kept our family woods of 110 acres. My father was working out in our woods, and make a long story short, he was pulling a hunter's tree stand. He hated them as much as I did, out of a tree, and instead of the tree stand pulling out, the tree gave way, and the tree fell on his head.
Oh, I'm sorry. Very sorry.
And, yeah, and thank you. But my mother who was there, she sort of became, you know, she was there for him, but, you know, trying to safeguard him in the healthcare system in two nursing homes and three hospitals. And everybody said, well, you know, he's 80 years old. What do you expect of him? They didn't expect him to live, talk, swallow, or any of those things. And they didn't know they were dealing with a daughter from hell. Actually, no, I used to be an investigative news reporter. So I did a lot of research. And I wasn't, you get more whatever with honey. And I was not ever mean or anything. But would surprise them with the information I came up with and said, have you tried this? Have you tried that? So anyway, my caregiving started with him, and then after he died 2.5 years later, and believe it or not, he ended up playing he was paralyzed on one side and in a wheelchair and telling jokes and was playing cards with his left hand with friends. So, you know, you can't ask for much more than that, can you?
No. So,
but I'm calling because I ended up being the caregiver, and my mother designated me as power of attorney for the next 13 years. And then in the meantime, I got hit by a semi-truck in my car. And so I had spinal surgery, jaw surgery, you name it. I went through it and did my best to also care for my mom and loved doing it. But then I finally had to turn over everything to my sister, my evil sister, and I am saying that with truth, who never once lifted a finger to try and help my dad and never cared to help my mother. But I finally had to, because of my health conditions, had to finally give up.
And she's abused this power of attorney.
Yeah. Now she's abusing her power of attorney. And just recently, my mother called me from her home the last 2 weeks of her being in her home. And she talked to me for about an hour and a half each time. And she told me she knew that she was moving to an assisted living. And she was sad about that. But she thought she was moving to an assisted living in her home community, Reedsburg.
And she wasn't. And I'm telling you what, I think we've got your sort of the train here of thought of what's going on, Chris. And just in the interest of time, I want to have our guest experts comment on this. Maybe Marcia would be willing to comment. And here we've got a situation where somebody was caring, one sister's caring for the parents, has to give that up and give that power of attorney up, and then the person who's taken it is apparently abusing that power.
And again, we do run into all kinds of family situations in the work that we do, and these are very, very challenging, and oftentimes there isn't a clear cut what's right or what's wrong. And oftentimes, if you truly do suspect that there's some real abuse going on, you can try to make referrals to Adult Protective Services or some of the other agencies that would then investigate. You could, you know, possibly go back through the legal system. I realize that some of these things, have costs associated with them and time, and nothing will happen quickly, unfortunately. Oftentimes, we have to let systems take place and follow through with circumstances before any changes can be made. And it is unfortunate, but there are some avenues that you can pursue.
Yeah. Tracy, do you want to add?
Yes, and just a brief question is, is this her power of attorney for health care?
She has all of the power of attorneys.
For everything. And your mother, does she have any cognitive issues?
No. I mean, she's like 95% clear. She does have a few issues with short-term memory, but my sister took out a restraining order, and I don't know where my mother is. I just know she's somewhere in the La Crosse area.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I think this would be where I definitely would seek legal assistance with this, because there's really no reason for this power of attorney, like for healthcare or these, to be activated if your mom is
still
able to make her own decisions.
Own
that is the key for everything, and that is the test that courts use, et cetera. Can she make her own decisions? So I think at this point, I would, you can contact Elder Law. You can go on the website. Elder Law is very helpful in these situations.
So that's elderlaw.com, or you just type in Wisconsin. We'll look this up.
Wisconsin Elder Law.
Wisconsin Elder Law.
There's actually an Elder Law project that is funded by the state.
And they are great. I've recommended people to them, and I've even had where they've done pro bono. So I would check this out. And that's what they specialize in, and get a sense of, you know, what steps to take next.
Yeah, good luck.
And I wish you the best.
Yeah.
Yes, good luck.
Good luck, thank you. Again, that was Wisconsin Elder Law?
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin Elder Law. Go online for that, Chris. And I want to get some others a chance to join in, so let's go to Rachel in Milwaukee. Rachel, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I was calling today because about 4 years ago, my parents, who are baby boomers, took in my dad's mom, who is going to be turning 90 in August. And I was calling because when she first went to live with them, she was very, I think, resentful of having to give up the independence of living by herself. But she had a number of strokes that sort of affected little things, like she would leave the dishwasher, like the door open, and she would create like little hazards that could end up hurting her, or, you know, she could end up falling because she had stairs in the place that she was living. But she's very much so still 100%, has no cognitive issues, and for a long time was very unpleasant and almost abusive in her own way towards them, and resentful towards them. And I just wanted to bring that up as like another side of taking care of elderly people, and how for some people who are not trained, I mean, they didn't have any training, and just how they cope with, you know, sort of the opposite situation.
Yeah.
Sure.
Some good points. Marcia, comment?
And again, we find all kinds of family situations. You know, there are situations where you have caregivers where they're caring for older parents, and maybe the parents were not the best parents when that child was younger. And so there's those deep-seated resentments and some of those things that we all carry with us. And oftentimes it's really difficult to resolve some of those issues. And we find it can oftentimes become even worse by Alzheimer's and some of the other issues that older adults are facing. And again, it is extremely challenging, and there are no real answers. But we do see that quite often.
You know, just to go along with that, Rachel mentions that her relatives didn't have any training. What kind of, and I bet there are a lot of people listening that are in the throes of this right now and or will know that it's going to happen. What about getting some advance help? What kind of information is out there that in terms of resources and just in terms of dealing with an elderly person?
Yeah, so I think this is another example of where the kids are trying to do what is best. I think it's his mom. But, there's a lot of strategies to use. There's also other steps to do before moving an elder out of a home or in with the children, particularly when the person, so it's a mixed bag. She's clear as a bell, can have her own self-determination, and yet she's at risk. So this is where you would want like a geriatric care manager, a social worker who is trained in this, would meet with both the caregivers and the elder. There are options. For example, it could be home modification, making modifications to the home where the upstairs, everything is shut off to the upstairs and the person lives downstairs. It could be maybe a small apartment. It could be in a retirement center, could be assisted living. If this independence sounds like that is so crucial to her, the social worker would kind of help with alternatives. And the reality is, my parents also passed away and we had to help them. And, you know, the reality is, if you're not, my brother said to me, what do people do, sis, when they don't have a social worker in the family? Mm-hmm. And that is a problem because we need to make this help more easily available so that people don't have to hunt it down.
Yeah.
Is
there a site that a website, for example, that someone could go to that would have resources available?
There's a variety. The ADRCs, which I referenced before, are really key in identifying local resources, caregiver support groups, Alzheimer's Association support groups. There's a lot of resources that exist in every community across Wisconsin.
United Way 211.
There's a lot of different areas when you just look up elder services or senior services, or there's a variety. Another one is if there's a senior center in your town. That's another great resource to utilize for not just activities, but also some of these support groups, some of the support, the education, the trainings that caregivers really need, because everybody goes into it kind of blindly. And caregiving for older adults is not like caregiving that you have as a mother for your child. It's a different role, and there are different challenges and emotions attached to that.
I remember when my mom was very ill, but I got impatient and said, "Mom, you just need to do blah blah blah." And I remember her turning to me and saying, "Is that what you would train your students to do with an elder?" And I said, "No," but I said, "I'm your daughter, not your social worker." And I just think that we love our parents, but we have to remember we're not neutral. You know, and that's why bringing a neutral. So I always tell my students, don't be the social worker in your family, because you are still the daughter or the son or whatever. And so I just think people need assistance to help with the best way to take care of both the children and the parent.
So go online and Google in services for the elderly in my community or something like that. Or if you live in Madison, services for the elderly in Madison, Wisconsin, or in Dane County or whatever county you're in.
Sure, and a lot of agencies like ours will show up on those searches. And
ADRC, mm-hmm. Aging Disability Resource Center, that's one to look up too.
Yeah,
as
ADRC.
Well.
Yeah.
ADRC.
That has all the resources in your community, in your county, in your area.
Well, I tell you what, I've learned plenty here, and it's a tough situation. I know that, and I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today to talk about this. Again, Elder Abuse Awareness Day is coming up in a couple of days, June 15th. And thanks again, Tracy Schrempfer. Appreciate it very much. Tracy is professor in the School of Social Work at UW-Madison. Marcia Hendrickson, thank you as well. Marcia is executive director of the South Madison Coalition of the Elderly. And we'll talk about this some more. There's lots of people who are online with questions, and I think it's definitely worth a repeat to have them back again and talk about it. Thanks again to them, and thank you for listening, and I hope you'll please stay with us. We're going to switch gears entirely and take a look at some fun, interesting things to do in the summertime with Mike Bino, editor of Our Wisconsin Magazine. That next, here on the Ideas Network.